My name's Joe. I'm an alcoholic. You know, like I was saying, if I seem a little sentimental tonight or reminiscent, because I kind of have mixed feelings. I feel a little sad and I feel very full for several reasons. In 3 days, it'll be my 5th birthday. This is the last night of these tapes. We're going to finish up on the 12th step tonight. And, you know, it's a good feeling. But I'm an alcoholic, and I always hate to see things come to an end. I usually use things until they absolutely quit working. And they're a little easier to let go. When things are still good and you have to give something up, which I've had to do sober, it's a little harder. So we're gonna take a little more time tonight if anybody wants to or has to leave it. At 7, that's okay, because there's a few things I'd like to talk about. I'd like to talk about the 12th step. I'd like to talk about my experience and the benefits that I've gotten from service and the traditions and the concepts a little bit, which are relatively new to me. There's as much in the traditions as we've covered in this book, and what we've covered in this book has only scratched the surface. It could go on and on, and I hope for a lot of you people it will. Then there's as much in the traditions, and I've just begun to experience those because I got into service. And then there's as much in the concepts, you know, and I think it's kind of interesting that we started these tapes on the title page with the circle and the triangle, and several months later we're all the way back around to the circle and the triangle where we started to experience the next part. When I hung out in the fellowship, I didn't feel like I belonged. When I got involved in the fellowship, I felt like a member. When I studied and read the steps, I didn't understand. When I experienced the steps, I felt more like a participant in Alcoholics Anonymous. And some major things happened in my life, and I had my own spiritual awakening, and have had, you know, I mean, they're on a daily basis. Even if it's just the realization some days that I'm still sober. But I think it, you know, the 12th step takes me to the next place. You know, you don't get to rest very often in this program. You're either moving in one direction or the other, and it's kind of like the 12th step took me to the next part of the program because I needed to experience all three parts. And then I think that circle comes into play because all of a sudden I feel a little more whole than I did when I was new. A lot more whole than I did when I was new because I got involved in service, which is the next part of the program. If I could warn anybody that's interested in this big book at all about anything that was probably my greatest lesson, would be not to get so carried away with dotting the I's and crossing the T's and every word in this book. You can get lost in the dogma, and believe me, I had my period, and probably still do, of being a little dogmatic and sometimes a little intellectual. But it's really about the spirit of these steps. It's really about what happens inside when you do this work. So I guess my warning would be if you get involved in this big book, if you start a workshop that we're going to talk about here in a little while, if you work these steps, don't think that sitting in a big book group studying and underlining your book, talking about each word, is going to do much good for you. It's about doing what's in this book that will change your life. Chapter 7, Working with Others. And, you know, I think the first word, you know, not to mention getting caught up in words, but the first word in this chapter is very, very important to me, because I remember before I ever read this book saying to my sponsor, this thing better be real. And it better be practical. And I had done a lot of weird, crazy drugs and had some strange experiences coming off of alcohol. And I'd had spiritual experiences and I'd seen weird things. and I wanted whatever this was going to do, this spiritual experience that you were talking about, that I was supposed to have as a result of these steps, I wanted it to be real. The kind of spiritual experiences I had didn't do much good the next day or the next week. I couldn't draw from them. I also wanted this thing to be practical. To me, that means, what can I do with it after I walk out of this place? What can I do with it after I walk out of these rooms? You know, does it work in my life? You know, and I think that's the test we get to see in the 11th step we were talking about last week. But it says here that practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. And I think the reason that magic happens is that he relates to my garbage. And he understands me, because that's what happened for me. It was finally one person sitting across the table from me who had been where I had been and felt the way I had felt and didn't have to do that anymore. It was kind of like I saw his garbage, but it didn't stink anymore. I knew that he had been changed. Somehow the stink was off his garbage, and it was a great jewel to give. It was a gift. And if somebody would have said to me 5 years ago that my experience for 17 years or my entire experience could one day benefit somebody, you know, I would have thought you were crazy. I thought my experience was not only going to hold me back if I could ever possibly do anything, and I didn't have much hope for that, but I didn't see how it could ever help anybody, because I had tried to do that. You know, I didn't go to college and get a degree and try to work in the field just to find out what was wrong with me. That was my main motive, but I was also hoping that maybe someday I could help somebody, and it never happened. It never happened while my garbage was still stinking. But I guess when the miracle of this program happened, and all of a sudden I saw that that was a gift. And it's an absolute miracle that I've been able to help anybody. Show up here sober, have 5 years, do this. I don't take any of that for granted, and I don't take the credit for any of that. I cannot do this on my own. I was never able to stay sober 30 days for 17 years. I couldn't talk to people when I got here. The first time my mother heard me speaking to me, she said, "I've never heard you talk like that. Or that long." My own mother. You know. That's real scary sometimes, because I know I haven't pulled this off much more than maybe the first few days or weeks. You know. I haven't made it go any further than that. I've shown up and I've been willing and I've done the work. I didn't even have the power to do most of this work. It also dawns on me on a regular basis that you people haven't done that for me either. You've been there when I've needed you. You've been there when I haven't needed. You've been there when I've liked you. And you've been there when I haven't liked you. But I know that you haven't moved my life on the way it's gone. You've inspired me. You've given me hope. You've encouraged me. You've called me on my stuff. You've loved me, but I know it's something more than human power, you know, and that scares me a little bit, because what if that stops, or what if I turn away from that? What if I get so arrogant that I don't need this program anymore? Because I need the fellowship just as much as I need recovery, as much as I need service, but I'm glad I need all three. Probably one of the most humbling things that somebody I sponsored once said was, "I'm glad to have a sponsor who's sick enough to need the whole program." And I do. And I've often thought, what that Don shared with me could I stop doing? Because he got me right into it right away. Going to lots of meetings, doing this work, being involved in service. Now, what can I leave out? You know, when I get a little complacent, when I get a little tired. And I don't know. I don't know. Because I know it's all part of a whole. Great promises here on this page. Life will take on new meaning. To watch other people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. And if somebody would have said that to me when I was new, that one of the bright spots of my life would be sitting in my living room doing this work with another drunk, you know, that wasn't me. My motives were not like, my motives were to get what I could get at any cost. And I wasn't interested in other people. But I have to say, I have to tell you tonight that one of the most exciting, fun, rewarding things that I do is to sit in my living room with drunks and do this work. I look forward to that. And that's not me. My motives have changed, and I don't know how that happened. There are a lot of directions in this chapter for working with others. And I guess you could be as dogmatic or pragmatic and a letter of the law as you want. You know, never do this, never do that. My God, I learned how to 12-step from guys that used to take booze in the car with them to the other extreme where people think they've made a 12-step call when they talk to somebody on the phone or take them to a detox and drop them off. In my opinion, that's not a 12-step call. You know, do you go back? Are you there the day they get out? You know, are you willing to sit up with somebody all night? You know, are you willing to sit down and go through this work with somebody, which takes more of a commitment than I have on my own power? I have to pray every time I meet with somebody to go through these steps. There's days I don't want to. And all of a sudden I watch that change and I get excited about what's going on there. I think probably the most important thing I've learned about working with others or a 12-step call is prayer. No two have ever been the same. I mean, when I'm working with somebody that asks me to be their sponsor, the only thing I really know is to go through this book and to do what this book says. But there's exceptions. You get somebody that can't read. You get somebody that can't write. You get somebody that for 5 or 6 months they can't just pick up this book and start reading it. I've had that. You know? You pray. You pray before a 12-step call. And it's about God anyway. Probably the most important thing that I've ever learned, that I heard a guy from Minnesota say about a 12-step call, is that if a man's not ready, there's not much you can say that's right. And if a man is ready, there's not much you can say that's wrong. I was also told the only bad 12-step call is if I get drunk. I see some fine lines there. I don't see that as black and white anymore either. A lot of people think this is a selfish program. I'm not so sure the program is selfish. I think it's a very selfless program for very selfish people, because selfishness is the root of my trouble. Now, I also understand my sobriety better come first, but I also know that I can't make it. I can't make my sobriety first and pull that off. That sounds like I'm the one that's doing it. I better put my commitment to my relationship with God first, but that was an unearned gift. You know, so there's a lot of fine lines here. And I think if any part of this program taught me that it's not all black and white, it's the 12th step. And it's probably the part of the program that got me out of being so dogmatic and letter of the law, and it, you only do it this way, you never do it that way. I was practicing the 12th step and getting involved in service and going out there in my life to practice these principles. You know, I think I used to be a little screwed up about the 12th step, and I thought that carrying this message was practicing these principles. And I think what I learned that practicing these principles is carrying the message. There's a man in Denver that I love very much that talks about, you know, the way you live makes so much noise, there's not really much you can say. I think probably some of our best 12-step work is when we don't know we're being noticed. Just going on with our life, and somebody at work or somebody here or somebody there says something. I've been watching you, and I wonder, you know, what is it you do? I think being open to the 12th step through the first 11, and especially the work in the first 9 and being there for step 11, opens us up to all kinds of incredible experiences. There's a little girl and I don't know why I'm saying this, but there's a little girl in New York City who called me a couple months ago, and she said that she was in a meeting in Dallas, Texas, and that she was dying, 10 years sober, had lost God. She shared this with the group, And the group told her to accept that and just to keep coming back. She said when they said that, she felt really empty. And that this guy came up to her afterwards with a strange look in his eye, and he said that those people that told her that were full of shit, because she didn't have to accept it because she was dying of untreated alcoholism. And she said he started ranting and raving like no one else she had ever heard in 10 years. And she heard something, and he suggested that she give me a call and see if I knew about anything in New York. And I told her about a group that's into this over in Brooklyn, and all sorts of incredible things started happening for her. My sponsor was there, not the next week or the next month, because he goes there every couple. He was there the next day. She got a chance to go through these first three steps and start an inventory. And turns out there's a lady there in Denver that's done this work that she was like right in contact with. A couple weeks later, she calls me up, and this little girl's on fire, and she said, all I did was say a simple prayer. And it just all opened right up to me. I mean, you never know. You never know what it is, how it's going to happen. So there's a lot of directions here. When you just, on page 90, it talks about when you discover a prospect for Alcoholics Anonymous, find out all you can about him. If he does not want to stop drinking, don't waste any time trying to persuade him. You may spoil a later opportunity. This advice is given for his family also. They should be patient, realizing that they are dealing with a sick person. At the same time, you know, we see some real miracles happen with people that we stick in there with. And let them know that we'll be there when they're ready. And keep going back and keep going back. You know, I'm glad they didn't give up with me after my 9th treatment center. And that in my 10th one, there was somebody there. I think the neat thing is, though, he told me he was there to save his ass, not mine. It always seemed like when there was these do-gooders, and they're up here, and I'm down here, and they're at all these places I went, it was like they were so high up there, I couldn't see what they were saying. But when a guy was honest enough to say and look right across, even with me at a table, that he was just like me, and that he wasn't there to save me, he was there to save him, so he could stay sober, and he told me about his drinking, and what he was like and how he felt, that I somehow heard that. Sometimes it's wise to wait till he goes on a binge. The family may object to this, but unless he is in a dangerous physical condition, it is better to risk it. Don't deal with him when he is very drunk, unless he is ugly and the family needs your help. Wait for the end of a spree, or at least for a lucid interval. I didn't have very many of those. Then let his family or a friend ask him if he wants to quit for good. For good. And if he would go to any extreme to do so. If he says yes, then his attention should be drawn to you as a person who has recovered. You should be described to him as one of a fellowship who, as part of their own recovery, try to help others, and who will be glad to talk to him if he cares to see you. You know, I think sometimes, you know, I don't know how Bill and Bob would feel about it, but, you know, I don't think they meant all this stuff about, you know, are you ready to stop drinking for one day? You know, I think we've kind of taken that to an extreme. Because every 12-step call I see in here, the one that Bill and Bob did earlier on, what they just said here, they talk about, are you ready to quit drinking alcohol for good and all and live life one day at a time? You know, I don't ever want to drink again. I live life one day at a time. I think it's also part of the damage that the short form of the third tradition has caused in AA. The long form says that our membership ought to include all those who suffer from alcoholism. Yet the short form has been stretched to such a dangerous extreme that it says the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. If he does not want to see you, never force yourself on him. Neither should the family hysterically plead with him to do anything, nor should they tell him much about you. They should wait for the end of his next drinking bout. You might place this book where he can see it in the interval. Here, no specific rule can be given. The family must decide these things, but urge them not to be over anxious, for that might spoil matters. Later on in page 91, it talks about see your man alone if possible. At first, engage in general conversation. After a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. If he is not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit, but say nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. If he is in serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture. If his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his. When he sees you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of the struggle you made to stop. Show him the mental twist which leads to the first drink of a spree. We suggest you do this as we have done it in the chapter on alcoholism. If he is an alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He will match your mental inconsistencies with some of his own. I wanted to hear that a man was like me, and that he had done those crazy things that I thought I was so alone in doing. You know, I was the only one that felt like that. I was the only one that did that. The day I drank on my dad's funeral when they asked me not to, you know, I left that and went back to that hospital feeling like I was the only person that probably ever did that. You know, and I found out here that I wasn't. I think this next statement, although, you know, I'm trying not to be so critical about this, is very important to what's going on in Alcoholics Anonymous now. I don't think we spend enough time doing this in our group with a 12-step call. It says here, if you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. You know, how many people spend time doing that nowadays in AA to help people find out, you know, what are you? What's wrong with you? I mean, if that's the first question we come in here with that's been plaguing us for however many years, what's wrong with me? It only makes sense that that should be the first question that gets answered. And it's amazing the number of people that have been around here for a long time and are still way up in the air about what's wrong with them. Am I this? Am I that? Am I an addict? Am I an alcoholic? Show him how your own experience, how the queer mental condition surrounding the first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. Don't at this stage refer to this book unless he has said it and has seen it and wishes to discuss it. He could, and be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. Let him draw his own conclusion. But at the same time, be satisfied that he's a real alcoholic. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him that possibly he can, if he's not too alcoholic. But insist that if he is severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself. Continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. Talk about the condition of body and mind which accompany it. Keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. Explain that many are doomed who never realize their predicament. Doctors are rightly loath to tell alcoholic patients the whole story unless it will serve some good purpose. But you may talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism because you offer a solution. You will soon have your friend admitting he has many, if not all, the traits of the alcoholic. If his own doctor is willing to tell him he is an alcoholic, so much the better. Even though your protege may not have entirely admitted his condition, He has become very curious to know how to get well. How you got well. I'm sorry. Let him ask you that question if you will. Tell him exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual feature freely. If the man be agnostic or atheist, make it emphatic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is he be willing to believe in a power greater than himself and that he live by spiritual principles. When dealing with such a person, you had better use everyday language to describe spiritual principles. There is no use arousing any prejudice you have against certain theological terms and conceptions that he may have, about which he may already be confused. Don't raise such issues, no matter what your own convictions are. He goes on to talk a little bit more about that and sums it up with on page 94, we are dealing only with general principles common to most denominations. Then it talks about outline the program of action. Explain how you made a self-appraisal, how you straightened out your past, and how you are now endeavoring to be helpful to him. It is important for him to realize that your attempt to pass this on to him plays a vital part in your own recovery. Actually, he may be helping you more than you are helping him. Make it plain that he is under no obligation to you, and that you hope only that he will try to help other alcoholics when he escapes his own difficulties. Suggest how important it is that he place the welfare of other people ahead of his own. It goes on and gives a lot of circumstances and a lot of things that might happen. The top of 94, it talks about, unless your friend wants to talk further about himself, do not wear out your welcome. Give him a chance to think it over. If you do stay, let him steer the conversation in any direction he likes. This is sometimes a mistake. If he has trouble later, he is likely to say you rushed him. You will be most successful with alcoholics if you do not exhibit any passion for crusade or reform. Never talk down to an alcoholic from any moral or spiritual hilltop. Simply lay out the kit of spiritual tools for his inspection. Show him how they worked with you. Offer him friendship and fellowship. Tell him that if he wants to get well, you know, it's a long time before a lot of people hear that nowadays, that you can get well here. And in some groups, it would be travesty to even, heresy to even say that. Tell him if he wants to get well, you will do anything to help. And realize at the same time that you're not going to keep any of them sober. Nor do you have the power to get him drunk. If he is not interested in your solution, if he expects you will act only as a banker for his financial difficulties or a nurse for his sprees, you may have to drop him until he changes his mind. This he may do after he gets hurt some more. If he is sincerely interested and wants to see you again, ask him to read this book in the interval. After doing that, he must decide for himself whether he wants to go on. He should not be pushed or prodded by you, his wife, or his friends. If he is to find God, the desire must come from within. If he thinks he can do the job in any other way, or prefers some spiritual approach, encourage him to follow his own conscience. You have no monopoly on God. We merely have an approach that worked with us. But point out that we alcoholics have much in common and that you would like in any case to be friendly. Let it go at that. Don't be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Search out another alcoholic and try again. You are sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you offer. Isn't it amazing you have to be totally desperate to really get it? I remember sitting in a treatment center one night and where I had been, and I was, I don't know, 5 or 6 months out of there in the program, and they brought these two women in. One of them was really beat up, had marks all over her arms, all beat up. Said she had lost everything, and the other one was dressed really nice and had a Continental outside, still had a house up in the mountains and some stuff. And I talked to both of them for about an hour, and I looked at one of them and I said, you know, you're going to have a much harder time with this program than this other girl here. And the one I was talking to was the one that still had a lot of stuff. Funny thing is, 5 years later, the one that was all beat up still sober. And the one that was still had some stuff is out there losing some stuff to get ready. I'm going to go on a little bit and hit on some of the main points, because there's so much here in this chapter to learn. And it doesn't really mean much if you just learn it and you don't experience it. And the best way to learn about the 12-step is to get out there. I mean, they started taking me on 12-step calls when I was new. Sometimes you make a 12-step call with a newcomer and an old-timer, and the wet drunk relates much more to somebody with just a few months, because he can see that. You know, 26 years is like, you know, sometimes you hear the man with 30 days, you know, when you're still out there. Page 97 gives me the stone. We've been talking a lot through these tapes about the cement from page 17 and the foundation in the first step. And if that first step is strong, you don't ever have to fall any further than on top of that foundation, no matter how crazy you get. I want that foundation to always be strong. But I know who mixes the cement and put those stones together. It ain't me. And that first stone, the cornerstone at the second step, and the keystone, page 97 says, never avoid these responsibilities, but be sure you are doing the right thing if you assume them. Helping others is the foundation stone of your recovery. A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. You have to act the Good Samaritan every day if need be. I was told the rest of that paragraph are the 12-step promises, and I'm not going to read those, but I think we each have to discover those in our own way. If somebody said I was going to go through all this work to finally get to a place where I could experience the description on page 97, I don't know. And to think that today I'm grateful for all those things that have happened. There's some great guides along the way. I like what they talk about on page 98. The third paragraph says, burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well, regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. Talks about domestic problems and divorce and strained relationships. Conditions we put on sobriety. Bottom of page 99 talks about remind the prospect again that his recovery is not dependent upon people. Is dependent upon his relationship with God. You know, so often nowadays we hear new people talk to like these people, and getting them to a meeting is what's going to keep them sober, or a sponsor. We've seen men get well whose families have not returned at all. We have seen others slip when the family came back too soon. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. And I can't tell you how that statement touches me. For working with somebody and using prayer and moving on through this work, and for my own life,